Hello again. Right. Well, today we are talking about leaving the past behind. That's the title of our message for this morning. And I don't know what that phrase conjures up for you, what feelings or emotions or just thoughts that gives you, leaving the past behind. Because actually some people feel like, actually, I really enjoyed the past. It was great. I don't want to leave it. In fact, I probably want to camp there and stay there or bring it with me. I love the past and I'd rather not move into the future. Or some people think, actually, yeah, that sounds spot on. Leaving the past, it was hard, actually. Really hard. It was painful. And leaving the past sounds like a really good thing. But then there's other people as well that kind of, with the past, they feel like, actually, the past is what has made me what I am and is what motivates me to do what I do now in the present. You know, we used to have a group that met in this church called Recovery Dynamics, and people that were working with people in alcohol addiction. And the people that ran that were people that had struggled with that themselves, that had been addicted to alcohol and had come through that and were able to help people. And so their past was really important in what they were doing in their present, in living a fulfilling and a life that contributed. So what leaving the past clearly doesn't mean, or it's not as simple as, is it doesn't mean forgetting the past. It doesn't mean sort of forgetting that it ever existed and leaving it and moving on. But one thing's really clear, we cannot live in the past. You can't. You can't live there. The past is gone. You can only live in the present, and your relationship with the past is really important in determining how you live in the present. And unless we leave it, in one sense, unless we leave that past, we'll be pulled back by it instead of being drawn forward into our future. I see this quite a lot, actually, that often people, when they're leaving somewhere behind, I don't know if you've ever noticed this, but people that are leaving somewhere to go somewhere new often try and get a tie into the place that they're leaving behind. I'm reticent to say this in case anybody is in this situation, but I'm going to say it anyway because I'm going to take a risk. But I've seen so many of my friends that are about to leave somewhere, and just as they're about to leave, they start a relationship with someone in the place that they're about to leave. And sometimes that works out and it's great and all that kind of stuff. But often that relationship ends pretty quickly after they've gone. And it's like they're trying to hold on to something in their past and not move into their future. And the Bible talks about having a vision of the future that draws us and calls us and influences how we live in the present. The Apostle Paul, who wrote a lot of the New Testament, said something like this in Philippians 3:13-14. He said, "One thing I do, forgetting what is behind, I press on to what's ahead, to the goal that God has called me with heavenward in Christ Jesus." And I always used to think that's two things. But actually it's two sides of the same coin. Leaving what's behind isn't enough. It's straining on to what's ahead. It's having a vision of the future. It's going somewhere. You don't just leave somewhere and then don't go anywhere. You leave somewhere to go somewhere else. And so it's really important to have a vision of the future. And today's story is all about the Israelites leaving a past behind, because they're about to step into something that God's got for them, a future, a fulfilling future, a future of promise and purpose. And we've been talking about that over the last few weeks, that they were called for a promise to be a great nation and a purpose. In order that, there'll be a blessing to the world, a great nation to be a blessing to all nations. And today's passage is about God actually saying, okay, in order to leave this past, there's something we need to do. There's some work to be done. And before I just talk about that for a couple of moments. I'm just going to tell a story about a film that I watched back in 2001, but it's a film that the story has stuck with me ever since, and it's a really great film. And someone can borrow it afterwards. One lucky person, the first person that gets to me afterwards, can borrow this film. It's called Remember the Titans. Has anyone seen this film? One person. The American. It's an American film. Brilliant. Well, maybe we should watch it as a church. That would be great fun, wouldn't it? But Remember the Titans is, it's about a high school American football team in sort of the civil rights era in the United States. And it's set in a high school in Virginia, so in the Deep South where, you know, racial segregation was the norm. And the film starts with this high school football team in one of the first desegregated school in the area, or even in, I don't know, it might have been in the States, but certainly in that area, it was the first desegregated school. You can imagine the problems that that brought with it. And so it's based around this high school football team, and because they're a desegregated school, they're a desegregated football team, so for the first time, black players are able to join this high school football team. And not only that, but the state have seen fit to replace their white successful coach who is about to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. He's won title after title after title with this team and is beloved in this town. And they replace him with a black coach. Now, that causes huge problems. And from the start, you see this team start to come together or not come together as the case is. And there are problems because they're dealing with a past that started in slavery, that is dealing with racism and segregation and violence towards black people, mistrust, all kinds of stuff, issues that have corroded this past and this history. And so this coach has got a job on his hands, and he takes them away to a training camp, and they're fighting, they're letting each other down, so that different American football is a crazy sport. But basically, if you don't protect your other players, they can get real hurt by the opposition. And it comes to a point in the team, he's like, I do know what to do here. We're not becoming a team at all. We're just a mess. And he takes them to a place in the States called Gettysburg. And Gettysburg is a place which was huge in the American Civil War, where thousands and thousands of Americans were killed by other Americans. And he gives this huge motivating speech to say, if we carry on like we are going to repeat this history where brother kills brother. We need to come together or we're going to die together. And it's this powerful moment, and little by little, harmony starts to come into the team. One by one, players start to get on with each other, and they leave that training camp a team. And the rest of the film is glorious, and I don't know whether I should say actually, because someone might want to borrow this, but let's just say there are challenges, but things go well. The battle he had, this coach, who is Denzel Washington in the film, was to deal with a past that had been corroded, that was a mess, and to give this team a new identity and a new vision of what they could be. They could be this amazing team. They could achieve great things. They could be brothers. They could live in harmony. And they buy into that vision, and they accept that vision, and they go for it. Now, the passage that we've read today is not actually too dissimilar a story. The Israelites are on the verge of inheriting this promise and purpose that we've talked about, to have a land of their own. If you can't quite get to grips with what that would have felt like, imagine some of these groups leaving countries like Syria and Iraq and places all over the world where people are leaving as refugees from their homes, and they're looking for somewhere to go and find home. Imagine how they feel. Vulnerable, not wanted, All these kind of things. And this is how the Israelites would have felt. They're on the verge of this now. 40 years they've been wandering through their own rebellion, admittedly. But their identity had been corroded by years of slavery and oppression, of their own bad choices and mistakes, of being homeless and wandering. Can you imagine what that felt like, now being on the edge of this, having a home finally, having a place where they'd be safe? But imagine this, imagine what would have happened if God had said, right, we're here, let's go, charge, headlong into the promised land, without dealing with some of this stuff from the past. Can you imagine what a mess this group of people could have ended up in, not having dealt with some of this baggage? I kind of liken it to, imagine someone who's been in prison for 40 years. Think Shawshank Redemption, if you've seen that film. Someone that's been lived as a prisoner, living, sort of paying for their crimes, all this kind of stuff. Imagine that person then on the verge of release. No one had ever talked to him about or her about what they'd done. No one had ever dealt with the issues of the past. No one had ever questioned their identity. They just felt like, actually, I'm a prisoner, I've made mistakes, I'm a terrible person, and I'm probably going to do it again. Imagine what kind of future that person might end up having. And so God addresses the issue, and this is what he does. It says, God says to Joshua, make flint knives and circumcise the Israelites again. Make flint knives and circumcise the Israelites again. Obviously, we don't circumcise in this church. But this was a massively powerful symbol. Because it was a question of identity. Back when first circumcision, God first gave the Israelites circumcision, he gave it to Abraham. And he said, this is a sign of the covenant between you and me. The covenant, the relationship between God and his people, that they'd be a great nation for a purpose, to be a blessing to the world. And this is the sign of it. This is how you'll remember it. It was a visual and permanent sign of a covenant, of a relationship between God and his people. It's a reminder, it's something they'd never forget. You don't, you know, it doesn't grow back, everyone. It's a visual and it's a permanent reminder. God says, it's my covenant in your flesh. And this is all about being on the edge of inheriting what they're going to inherit. And God actually getting some of this slavery out of the people. It's a great line that, you know, it's easier to get people out of slavery than it is to get slavery out of people. You can take people out of the situation they're in, but they still carry that within them. And it's easier to take them out of that than it is to take away the experiences and the identity that they inherited or took on during that time. And by circumcising the people, it wasn't just some ritual. You know, rituals in the Bible, God's always saying to the Israelites, time and again, circumcise your hearts. This is a heart issue. This is reflective of what's going on inside of you. So this is just a physical symbol, but actually it's about what's going on inside. And he's saying, circumcision is saying, you're no longer slaves, you're no longer rebels, you're no longer homeless wanderers. You're my covenant people, you are in relationship with me. And there's a great line in verse 9 where the circumcision's happened, and God says to the people, he says, today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt. Or the disgrace of Egypt. So they have taken away the reproach of Egypt. So, what about us? And this is a message for a community, but it's a message for individuals as well. Because everyone's got a past. Communities have a past. Alma Church has a past. But we all have a past as well, as individuals. And my question today is, are we being driven by our past? Or Are we being called by a vision of the future, by what God's calling us to be? Today, just think that question now in your head. Am I today living as someone that's driven by what happened in my past? Or am I living with a sense of what could be, what God's calling me to, what God's calling me to be and do? What's defining you? What's defining us and our life together? And if it's not a vision of the future and of what could be, we risk living small, narrow and unfulfilled lives. We do. But it's a journey. It's a journey. It's a journey out of slavery and into freedom. You know, there's a sense in which in the Christian faith, we're called free people. You know, Jesus says, who I set free is free indeed. And that's true. And that's our identity. But actually, it's a journey to get there. We're somewhere between the slavery of our old ways of thinking, of our old lives, of our habits, of living in a society. We're part of a culture and a society. And it's not as simple as, okay, now, that's it, I'm free, you know. The Apostle Paul writes loads about this. He wrestles with this tension all the time. In one sense, he says, you were once this, but now you're this. And then there's another sense in which he says, the things that I really want to do, I just don't do. Who'll rescue me from this body of death? And in some senses, he's still dealing with the slavery of his past life. And he had a past, you know, a murderer of Christians who becomes a Christian. He had loads of stuff that he was dealing with. And he was on that journey to freedom, but he wasn't defined by it. He wasn't defined by his past. And he said, forgetting what's behind, I press on to what's ahead. And for us as a community, this is really important. It's really important at this stage of our life together. And you know, if you're not part of this community, think about this just for yourself for a moment. That we're on a journey that we need to be called by a vision of the future. You know, this church has got a great heritage and a great history, and so much that we need to remember and carry with us in our hearts, but we can't camp there. We can't camp in what's gone on before. We have to leave those things behind. And we now think, what are we being called to in our future? What's God calling us to? What's God calling us to be? And if we need a map for that, which we do, it's there in the Gospels. It's the way of Jesus. It's following the way of Jesus. It's becoming, what Paul said, a new creation. And for us as individuals, that begins with, you know, if you want to start on that journey to freedom, we won't circumcise you. That's not what we do here. But in the New Testament, that's been replaced by baptism. And baptism is an image of dying to an old way of life, of saying, it's dying to my old ways of thinking, the things I've done that I regret, the mistakes I've made, the way I've hurt people, and it's rising to a new life in Jesus. And for us as a community, it means meeting together week by week. We don't just meet together to be a social club and fun. When we meet together like this, it's a prophetic image of living as free people together. And it's stepping out of the slavery of consumerism and all the things that go on in the world out there that influence our lives. And it's coming together and it's practicing that freedom and living in that freedom so that we can go out and be equipped to take that to a world that that needs it. And so I want to encourage you, if you've never been baptized and you think, I want to start on that journey of faith, speak to me afterwards. I'd love to chat to you about baptism and what that means. And if actually you think this morning, I've been living that way. There's stuff in my past that is determining how I live now. And it isn't good. It's making me small. It's making me narrow. it's painful, then I'd encourage you to pray with someone after the service. Talk about it. That's what this community of faith is all about. And in a second, we're going to sing a song or two, and this is a chance for us to respond as a community, but as individuals as well, to God. And I'm going to finish with just some words from Colossians. So this is Paul, and this is the guy I was talking about. This is a man with a past, if anyone had one. And let his words, you might just want to close your eyes, but let his words just wash over you today and think about these in the light of your life. And he wrote, "Since then, you have been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on things below, on earthly things. For you died, and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you will also appear with him in glory. For you died, and your life is now hidden with Christ in God." I think it would just be nice just to pray for a minute and just to have a little minute of silence and just think about any way that God might want to speak to you this morning through that and how you might want to respond to that. God, would you help us to leave the past, to remember what we need to remember, and to carry the lessons and the treasured memories we need to carry, but not to camp there, not to hold on, but to be drawn into a vision of the future that you have for us, with all its potential, with all its promise, with all its purpose. And pray for that for us as a community, our church, and for anyone here this morning, Lord, all of us as individuals, that we would be drawn into a future in you. Amen. So we're just going to